Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lab Medicine's podcast series. My name is Kelly Swales, and I'm the web editor for Lab Medicine. Joining us today are the authors of a case study recently published in Lab Medicine. This paper discusses primary amoebic meningoencephalitis and highlights how critical the laboratory's role can be in patient care.
Hi, my name is Dr. Rebecca Levy, and I'm an anatomic and clinical pathologist specializing in hematopathology. I work at Arkansas Children's Hospital. I'm joined today by the technical chief of the hematology laboratory at Arkansas Children's Hospital, who is Charlotte Stewart. We also have the pleasure of being joined by Tamika Reed, a lead medical technologist in microbiology at Arkansas Children's Hospital. We are here today to discuss the story of a survivor of a Naegleria phalloi infection at our hospital from several years ago. And we also want to inform the laboratory community of what they can do to help identify this microorganism quickly. We are in the middle of summer right now, and this is the time of year when we all need to be vigilant and looking for this microorganism, because identifying Naegleria phalloi could help save a life. So first, what is primary amoebic meningoencephalitis, and what causes it? We're going to refer to primary amoebic meningoencephalitis as PAM. PAM is a very rare disease, however it has a high mortality rate. PAM is caused by Naegleria phalloi, which is a freshwater amoeba. This organism resides in freshwater lakes and ponds and can survive in pools that are inadequately chlorinated. In the past 50 years, there have been over 130 cases of Naegleria-induced PAM in North America, with only 3 known survivors. One of those survivors is from our institution, Arkansas Children's Hospital. Naegleria phalloi infections are most commonly seen in southern states and in the summertime. However, fatal cases of PAM have been reported as far north as Minnesota and Ohio, which highlights the importance of clinical suspicion and history regardless of the geography. So Charlotte, could you tell us how the amoeba affects the CNS?
Okay. Naegleria phalloi infection begins by the amoeba entering the nasal cavity, usually through the induction of water via submersion, diving, or splashing. Naegleria enters the body through the nares and travels through the nasal mucosa along the olfactory nerves, across the cribriform plate, and then enters the brain. Naegleria does not infect the brain by drinking contaminated water.
All right, Tamika, why is it called a brain-eating amoeba?
Naegleria phalloi is known as a brain-eating amoeba because it can destroy brain cells. The presence of microorganisms in the central nervous system causes an inflammatory reaction and has an associated release of cytotoxic molecules, which results in extensive tissue damage and necrosis. Several pathogenic mechanisms enable the amoeba to harm its host, including secretion of pore-forming proteins, proteases, and phospholipases that likely contribute to demyelination. This destruction leads to the lysis of erythrocytes and surrounding nerve cells. The amoeba also has immune evasion mechanisms such as removal of the membrane attack complex and resistance to cytokines.
So Tamika, what affects survival?
A key factor to effective treatment is the speed of diagnosis. PAM is a rare occurrence, is not often considered as a likely diagnosis. Therefore, the laboratory's identification of the microorganism may be the first time an amoebic etiology is considered. This rapid identification can help to avoid delays in diagnosis and therapy.
So now we would like to tell you the story of our patient who survived. Several years ago during the summer, a patient presented to our emergency department in the early evening. She's a previously healthy 12-year-old girl with a 3-day history of headache, lethargy, and fever with a high temperature of 103 degrees Fahrenheit. Prior to her arrival at the ED, she had developed nausea and vomiting. These findings are nonspecific and activated a workup for possible meningitis. A computed tomography scan, which is a CT scan, of her head yielded normal findings. A complete blood count, also referred to as a CBC, identified mild neutrophilic leukocytosis and a normocytic anemia. A lumbar puncture was performed. The results revealed leukocytosis with a predominance of neutrophils. Right Giemsa and Gram stains were performed and yielded positive results for numerous organisms. Tamika was the microbiology technologist on service that evening who identified the microorganisms as morphologically consistent with Naegleria species. Charlotte, how does the medical technologist analyze a CSF?
At our institution, protocol dictates that all fluids be sent to the laboratory for analysis immediately and handled on a stat, which is an immediate basis, because lysis of cells takes place soon after removal from the body, generally within 1 hour of collection. The specimen is evaluated grossly for color, turbidity, and appearance of the supernatant. Next, slides are prepared via cytospin centrifugation, and a cell count is performed on a hemocytometer for white blood cells and red blood cells. The two Right Giemsa stain slides that are prepared via cytospin are reviewed, and a medical technologist performs a WBC differential count.
So tell us about our patient's CSF.
In the case of this patient, her CSF was described as milky in color with increased turbidity and a colorless supernatant. The WBC count was 3,675 per milliliter, and the RBC count was 53 per milliliter. A manual differential of 100 cells identified 86% neutrophils, 1% bands, 2% lymphocytes, 9% monocytes, and 2% other cells.
All right. Tamika, how is the CSF evaluated in microbiology?
Usually, a single Gram stain slide is prepared. However, due to the turbid nature of the fluid, the elevated WBC count, and the increased neutrophil count, I was concerned about the possibility of meningitis. Then I prepared 2 Gram stain slides from the CSF specimens, processed them via cytospin, and examined them immediately.
So, Tamika, had you ever seen a case of Naegleria before?
Yes. In the past, I have reviewed previous positive Naegleria CSF Gram stain slides from ACH, and that helped me identify the microorganisms quickly.
So, what do the trophozoites look like?
The Naegleria trophozoites are large, round to pear-shaped cells with a prominent, dark nucleus and scattered vacuoles. On Gram staining, the cells can appear similar to macrophages. However, the cytoplasm of the amoeba has a well-defined border.
So why is this a big deal? The diagnosis is noteworthy because the clinical findings at the time of diagnosis only included fever, headache, and lethargy, all of which are nonspecific and offer a diverse differential diagnosis. Upon the discovery of an amoeba in the CSF, the clinical team obtained additional history that the patient had been swimming at a freshwater park 1 week before her arrival at the emergency room. Immediately after the emergency department physicians received the CSF results, they consulted the infectious disease department and began to treat the patient for PAM with amphotericin B, rifampin, azithromycin, and fluconazole. Our patient also received aggressive supportive therapy, including dexamethasone to control for cerebral edema. The clinical physicians contacted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, also known as the CDC, and on day 2 of hospitalization, they started our patient on miltefacine, which is an investigational medication. An amoeba culture for CSF was performed by a reference laboratory, and the results identified the presence of amoeba consistent with Naegleria species. Laboratory professionals at the CDC performed real-time PCR on specimens from our patient, and the results were positive for Naegleria fowleri. The patient received 27 days of treatment with antifungals and antibiotics, in addition to placement of an external ventricular drain, hyperosmolar treatment with mannitol, and induced hypothermia to lower intracranial pressure. Our patient made a full recovery after 52 days of hospitalization. Charlotte, what else does the lab do to identify Naegleria fowleri?
Cerebrospinal fluid, also known as CSF, is produced by cord plexus cells and lines the ventricles within the brain. Cytologic analysis of cerebrospinal fluid in patients with PAM typically shows an increase in neutrophils, and nucleotrophozoites can be identified in the CSF via Reitz-Ginza stain.
So Charlotte, does the CSF have to be analyzed within an hour?
CSF is a hypotonic solution, and leukocytes will lyse if left in the medium. Specifically, neutrophils lyse more rapidly than lymphocytes and monocytes. Published data have shown that as many as 40% of WBCs in CSF may lyse after 2 hours at room temperature. Results of another study verified that CSF has a decrease in neutrophil counts at 1 hour by 32% and 2 hours by 50%. Our body fluids may show a similar decrease in cell counts at room temperature. At our institution, our goal is to interpret body fluid results generally within 1 hour on all shifts. The speed of the microscopic evaluation and diagnosis plays a major role in the ability of the clinical teams to provide aggressive treatment and novel therapies to the patient.
And that's a good point. So why does the turnaround time matter so much? PAM has a variable incubation time and ranging from 1 day to as many as 7 days. So the clinical signs have similarities with those of bacterial and viral meningitis, including fever, neck stiffness, and severe headaches. Symptoms can progress to prolonged nausea, vomiting, and even seizures. The disease can progress to acute hemorrhagic necrotizing meningoencephalitis, which can lead to death in as soon as 7 to 10 days. So a variable delay in treatment can be secondary to the time intervals and multiple stages of care. This includes the time it takes from exposure to exhibition of symptoms, from arrival for treatment at a healthcare facility to the workup and figuring out the diagnosis, and also finally from diagnosis to the initiation of recommended therapy. So Charlotte, who should be on the lookout for this infection?
Pediatric practitioners, especially those who practice in the southern United States during the summer months, should be careful to include this differential in the setting of meningitis-like symptoms. It is also important for clinicians to ask patients about a history of swimming. Further, this diagnosis should be considered by medical technologists when evaluating a CSF specimen that has indicators of meningitis, including turbid fluid, elevated WBC count, and increased neutrophil count.
So, Tamika, what can medical technologists do to help?
Successful treatment of PAM is a rare occurrence and can only be attempted after correct diagnosis, which relies on rapid recognition of the microorganism by medical technologists and pathologists. In our patient, prompt diagnosis followed by rapid communication with the treating physicians in the ED and consultation with infectious disease led to the patient being fully cured of PAM.
So what can everybody in their hospitals do to identify Naegleria fowleri more quickly? It's critical that medical technologists consistently provide timely CSF evaluation and explore the diagnosis of PAM, looking for the amoeba in the setting of meningitis, especially in the summertime. If you would like to know more about the successful clinical treatment of our patient who survived, please read the following article, Successful Treatment of an Adolescent with Naegleria fowleri Primary Amoebic Meningoencephalitis, which was written by Matthew Lynham, and it's published in the Journal of Pediatrics. Thank you for listening to our podcast, and hopefully this will heighten the awareness about the immediate diagnosis of Naegleria fowleri and help save another life.